We're going to change the order here just real quickly for Mr. Anderson to testify. We'll go into public hearing on House Bill 3305. I appreciate the fact that you've waited most of the afternoon and would appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, members of council, my name is Herbert Anderson. I reside on a farm 3 miles from Dayton, Oregon. I operate a farm as a farmer, and I also rent land from others, which are used in the farming operation. I also lease land to others. My experience in this particular subject stems more from my practice of the law. I practiced in Portland for 38 years, and I've been involved in a number of cases involving farmers in Chapter 11, Chapter 12, and other problems. And it seemed to me that everyone has a right in the crop except the person who furnishes the land, and that doesn't really seem fair. Those who provide fertilizer, or those who provide seed, or those who provide labor have a right to a statutory lien upon the crop that's grown on the land. But the person who furnishes one other component that's necessary for the crop has no right to a statutory lien. And that's the landowner who leases the land. In this particular time of troubles in the farming industry, many farmers are renting out land. And in this already troubled situation, it would be particularly unjust, I think, that those ones who furnish their land for the growing of crops should find themselves behind everyone else in the event that the lessee cannot pay the rent. So the proposal is in House Bill 3305 to add land to those items which will authorize a statutory lien, and they would be on a par, land would be on a par with one who supplies materials or provides services on farmland for the growing of crops or the raising of animals. The statute in 87.226 and 87.242 would have some brief insertions which would simply include land along with those other items which justify a lien. So that is the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Could you give me some kind of scope of problem here? Obviously you've experienced it and you mentioned that other land providers have, but is this something that's distinctly new and given the last few years of the economic downturn, or this has been a historic problem that has never been addressed before?
It's a problem that has not been addressed before, and it's one that I think should be. It can result in an injustice.
Well, can you give me an example of the injustice that happened to you so we can put this in some sort
of... None has happened to me personally. No, I have not personally had any such problem. I have observed it in some of the cases that I've been involved in.
Perhaps just expanding on the chair's question, could you just give us an example of someone else's misfortune that this bill would remedy that
well,
particular situation?
If the lessee is unable to pay the rent, becomes insolvent, if those who have furnished seed, fertilizer, and other services on the land file liens, they will be ahead. And also the Federal Land Bank, the PCA, and whoever else might have a lien on the crop would be ahead of the landowner. So it could very well be that the landowner would get nothing. If he has to be behind the secured creditor, he would probably get nothing.
Good question. I spent a good part of my life in the state of Iowa, and this law is already on the books. I guess my question is, along the lines of the chairs, is this a problem that surfaced, or why haven't we remedied this sooner than today? Why are we... I was curious, has it come up before?
I haven't heard that a bill has ever been presented before. Did I understand you say they already have this kind of a law in Iowa?
Yeah.
I would think that most farming states would have a law like this. Actually, I was rather surprised that Oregon didn't have.
Further questions? Just one. Mr. Anderson, have you discussed this with the financial institutions and got any feelings from them with regard to it, or have there been any conversations?
No, okay. No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your patience today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your hearing me. I gave a copy of my statement, but it was very brief and said only what I'd already said orally. I
appreciate that. The Oregon Seed Trade Association, you're going to have to help me with your last name.
Walter Galth.
Galth, okay. Mr. Galth?
Mr. Anderson? Perhaps you might want to respond to some of the things I would say, so I didn't want you to get away that quickly. Okay. My name is Walter Galth, for the record, Mr. Chairman. I am an attorney practicing in McMinnville. I am here today in my capacity as representative of the Oregon Seed Trade Association. I would say that the major concentration of my practice over the last 6 years has been in the area of agricultural service liens. The Oregon Seed Trade Association and another of my clients, Ralston Carino, have looked at this bill and have reviewed it and have want to respond to some of the statements made by Mr. Anderson. I don't know that our comments should be construed in the nature of opposition to this bill, but nevertheless, I think the record should be clear before the committee acts, and there are a couple of other additional actions which should be taken should this bill be enacted. The first comment I would make is that Mr. Anderson is appealing to the committee on behalf of lessors. And that is the concern. I understand that this would include lessors of land as covered services under agricultural service liens. The bill as it has been proposed simply says a person who furnishes land, and I think that is too overly broad in general. It could be construed to include a person who sold land on a contract of sale or a person who sold land on a deed with a trust deed. And if this bill is enacted, we certainly would request that it be narrowed to include those persons who lease land for the growing of crops or raising animals. And I think that's within the intent of the sponsors of the bill, unless I'm wrong. Second, I think Mr. Anderson has indicated that prior to this time, lessors of farmland had no security in the crops, or could obtain no security in crops which would put them on an equal par or even in a competitive arena with the holders of security interests or the holders of agricultural service liens. I think this is inaccurate. I handed to your clerk copies of, yes, and if you look back on the third page, I believe it is, of that handout, there is a statute, and the legislature has provided for security on the part of lessors of farmland, and that is under the priority section of 87-146-2B. And it's perfectly clear that a lessor who retains security interest in crops has an absolutely prior position in 50% of those crops, which is superior to the position of any holder of agricultural services liens, or in this case would be superior to the security interests of banks and or financial institutions, since they are subordinate to agricultural services liens. Therefore, when Mr. Anderson indicates that there has been no statutory action taken to enable lessors to protect themselves as part of their lease process, I have to draw your attention to this statute to indicate that the legislature has provided them an absolute priority with respect to the 50% of the crop. So if 50% of the crop will cover the rent, and probably in the farming area, 50% of the crop ought to cover the rent, then they are absolutely protected as secured creditors, providing they have filed a security interest and have filed a financing statement. I think that addresses Mr. Anderson's second and third points, that this problem has not been addressed, and also that the interest of banks comes ahead. It's true that if a lessor does not, as part of their lease, reserve a security interest, and as part of the lease, file a financing statement, then they are, in essence, not taking advantage of the law which is on the books, which enables them to obtain priority. And that, in that case, they would be, and I guess often are, unsecured creditors when it comes to a bankruptcy or any such action. As I say, I don't think our clients, my clients, the Oregon Sea Trade Association or Ralston Purina, are particularly opposed to allowing a lessee to be treated similarly to a supplier. I do think that, however, they would ask that if that is the case, that it be limited to lessees. And second, that this priority section under 146.2b be repealed, because the effect of passing this bill would be to add to the existing superiority of the lessee's position and would actually place the lessee in a far stronger position than the suppliers and other holders of agricultural service liens. And our clients would find that extremely inappropriate. It's one thing to be on an equal basis with somebody. It's quite another to have somebody be on an equal basis with you in 50% of the product, but on an absolutely superior basis to you in the other 50%. Finally, I only have one other point, and then I'll stop and let you ask any questions you may have. And that is that if this bill is to be enacted, there is another provision farther along in ORS 80, Chapter 87, which I have added to you on the next page, and that is the limitation on the extent of liens. Liens, which are claimed by providers of agricultural services, are by statute only allowed to extend 6 months from the time of the filing of the claim of lien. Because of the language of 87.256, unless the word lessee were added in there, there would be no such limitation on the agricultural service lien of a lessee, and that again would treat different holders of agricultural service liens differently and inequitably. And therefore, should this bill become law, I think it would be necessary to also amend 87.256 to insert the word lessees or lessees or providers of lessees of land, as in section 226. I think that concludes my remarks, and perhaps I can just ask if there are any questions by anyone on the panel. Questions?
So, to summarize your testimony, you feel that those who provide seed, for instance, should come before the person who owns the land if that person is not paid?
Not at all. I think our clients are quite willing to have a bill which would equalize and allow the lessee of land to have an agricultural service lien, and that is, we are not here opposing that aspect of this bill. What we are opposing is the providing of that without repealing the already existing security feature, which is provided for lessees, which allows them to get ahead of agricultural service liens on half of the crop. And they would think that if those two things exist at once, that is truly unfair.
Further questions? Well, I'd like to know the scope. Do you have any feeling for how often the statutes that you cited, 87.146, are utilized or...
In 6 years of practice, I have never come across a situation where a lessor of land has, in any of the cases I've been involved in, been a competitor in terms of attempting to be paid for agricultural services. My experience is that the farmer and the financer and the supplier all understand that if the landowner is not paid, then the crop cannot be grown, and there is a wide respect for the relationship between the lessor and the lessee. So I can't say to you that I perceive a problem, but I'm not disputing Mr. Anderson's claim that there may be cases where lessees or lessors have failed to take advantage of the security interest they have a right to take and hence have been harmed by that.
Further questions?
Good. Thank you.
Okay, obviously, Herb, because you've come forth, you thought you want to add some comments to your previous testimony.
If I could, just briefly. I would have no objection to changing the word furnishes to leases, as was suggested. On as to 87146, well, there is, of course, a right to a consensual lien, but that's an entirely different matter. The lease has to contain the provision for the lien, and they have to obtain the signing of a financing statement. And farmers are not always that knowledgeable about those that kind of commercial practice as people, as seed dealers are. And farmers don't necessarily do it. But there are practical reasons why that's not a very good answer. Farmers generally have checks coming in throughout the year. If they belong to a co-op, if they're selling their products to a cannery or a freezing plant or a co-op, they have these checks that come in from time to time. And if somebody's got a lien on the crop, then the checks are going to be made out to them. Now, this is something I have had personal experience with. I have known to write in a lien, but then I have to go to the bother of, and it isn't only me, it's the renter, has to get those checks endorsed every time they come in. And with the type of lien that you are entitled to by statute, you don't have to file your claim of lien immediately. You can wait until the close of the furnishing of the 75 days after the furnishing of the land or the services or the seed and file it then, which means that for the bulk of the year, you'd be entitled to have a lien, but you wouldn't have to file it. And you'd get away from that problem of having to endorse those checks all the time. And usually the renter wants to get those checks as quick as he can. If you're not around, it's a difficult. Anyway, it's a nuisance. As was suggested, we're not trying to get ahead. I'm not proposing the lessor be ahead of any of these other people who furnish things that go into making the crop, but only that they be equal. I don't think the consensual lien, which has always been available, is equal to the statutory lien. And as far as 87256, I think that should have the amendment as was suggested to limit the right to bring suit to 6 months after the lien is filed.
Mr. Chair, perhaps both witnesses could get together with counsel and see if we couldn't come up with proper language, because I think that although we haven't had the depression that's occurred in my home state in the agricultural community here, that the opportunity to lease land for a person who owns farm maybe the only route that he or she has in trying to hang on to that farm, if they want to stop farming for a while and not let their land go to waste, then they need to be protected as well as the people that provide the seed. So that would be my advice at this point.
Would you two gentlemen be willing to do that so we can...
Seed Association would be very, very willing to work with Mr. Anderson to come up with a bill. I hear that what I hear is broad agreement that... to eliminate one ineffectual method in order to equalize the existing, more effective method.
Well, I'm almost willing to bet that if we ask the financial institutions to come up and testify that they would be in opposition to what you just said, but I just off the top of my head am willing to make that commitment.
I can't speak for them. Mr. Bronner will have to speak
so
that.
Broad agreement might be only limited to the two of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Frank, you haven't signed up, but did I accurately represent your viewpoint on this matter?
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. You just gave my testimony.
I've heard it so often, Frank.
The situation is that we have developed Oregon solutions for Oregon problems with regards to liens. The lender sort of provides the money that allows the farmer to purchase the fertilizer and allows the farmer to sign a lease and grow the crop. And in this state, my members provide over 50% of the production loans in the state. Now, each time we add to the uncertainty, we diminish the amount of lending we're going to make. We have a secret lien for 90 days when we're dealing with grain. We addressed a problem there. We believe the landowner is properly protected today. Filing a financing statement is rather simple. Most landowners use attorneys, and they certainly know how to do that, and they're protected and prioritized up to 50%. So we think it isn't broke. We do think that this bill will permit additional competition with the lender for a security interest in the collateral, and we must oppose it.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Thanks, Frank. I'm told that someone else wants to testify on this House Bill 3305. Is that accurate? No, that's not accurate. Okay. Then we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3305. And gentlemen, if you can come back with some suggested alternatives, then we can look at those and determine whether we want to go forth with that. No commitment, but if you can look at it, and we'll examine your end product. And I close the hearing on 3305. Go back to the printed schedule that we had out, and I believe, although I don't have it here, 2323 was scheduled first for work session. Is that, anybody got there?
Yeah, your agenda somewhere. Yeah. Sure, hang on, Mr. Sheriff.
Okay, 2323. Let's open the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2323.
Yes. Excuse me. My name is Alan Brickley. I'm an attorney at law with offices at 1211 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. I'm here representing the Oregon Land Title Association along with Michael Magnus, who is somewhere out in the hall. We're trying to locate him. He is the drafter of certain amendments which we are going to propose with regard to House Bill 2323. This particular House Bill in its original form was designed to create a uniform system for constructive notice and creating liens against real property, and essentially limited the ability to create a lien based upon recording of various items in the county clerk's lien record. We have met with various individuals who have some interest in House Bill 2323 and have proposed certain amendments, and I'll let Mr. Magnus review those amendments with you very briefly.
Okay, now that you've bought some time until I got here.
Given those also to.
I didn't realize it was that obvious.
Well, yeah.
No, unfortunately, this is done today by me.
I should comment for the record, there is considerable reluctance among committee members to act upon a bill where we just see the amendments presented today, and members of the audience and interested parties haven't had an opportunity to thoroughly review them. Just for the record, I appreciate the what?
They're not LC prepared. Yes.
And they don't have your name on. Oh, there they do. Okay.
I can appreciate the committee's concerns in that respect. Unfortunately, I wasn't, as you are well aware, at our last work session, there was quite a few opponents to the bill, and it took some time to sort out exactly what their concerns were and to address those in connection with this piece of legislation. So I didn't start drafting these amendments until 11:15 this morning, so I do apologize for the tardiness with which they've been submitted to everybody. I think I've handed them out to most everybody that's here in this room today. I do have a few extra copies, though, and as you're aware, there were primarily two or three opponents with respect to this bill, and the areas of concern were focused on the judgment lien area, and in turn, with respect to the cities, on the cities being required to record their dockets in the county clerk lien record. As to the latter item, that is with respect to the city, we in these amendments are proposing that any reference whatsoever to requiring the cities to record their lien dockets in the county clerk lien record be eliminated, stricken from the bill. So, and I believe that on that basis, the cities will no longer have any opposition whatsoever to the bill. B.J. Smith is here. I'm certain that she can address that issue before the committee. The other issue was the docketing of judgments versus the recording of judgments in connection with that matter. And I spoke with Linda Zuckerman of the State Court Administrator's Office, and what I've done with these amendments is basically have eliminated the requirement that in the county that the judgment is originally docketed. So, for example, if you obtain a judgment in Multnomah County and you docket that judgment in Multnomah, and it's docketed in Multnomah County in accordance with present law, that docketing will automatically create a lien against the real property of the judgment debtor as it is provided under current law. However, with respect to transcribing judgments, you will no longer, under our amendments, transcribe judgments from one county to another. So if you have that Multnomah County judgment, you won't transcribe over into Clackamas County. Instead, you will record a certified copy of that judgment or a lien record abstract of that judgment. And that, in, at least from my conversations with the various opponents to the bill, poses no additional burden or problem on creditors, because it's either you tell the clerk to transcribe, or if the function is performed outside of the scope of the clerk's office, the circuit court clerk's office, and that should pose no problems from that standpoint. And that's all that these amendments do, is to put a lot of the law back in there, eliminate the cities, and to clarify the fact of recording in another county. And I certainly intend to have legislative counsel, you know, fine-tune the language and clear up any kinds of discrepancies that we may have in the bill. But that's the basic concept behind these amendments, and conceptually, it's my understanding that that satisfies all of the opponents' objections to the legislation as proposed.
Okay, well, you did a good job in telling me what the amendments don't take out of the previous bill, so it doesn't happen. Why don't you tell me if we pass this out as now amended, what we specifically would do?
Well, first off, you would create a statutory definition of constructive notice. In turn, you would adopt a provision in the law that specifies the type of legal description that would be utilized in creating that constructive notice. And that language was adopted from ORS Chapter 223, so it's something that was already in present law. In addition, it would cause any other matters other than judgment liens and the city dockets, it would cause the recordation of all of those matters. So, for example, if one intended to institute a foreclosure of a mortgage, in order to create notice of the institution of that mortgage foreclosure in the county records, you would record a notice of Liz Penance. And there's a statutory form of Liz Penance that's very simple to fill out, and it's found on page 11 of the bill, pages 11 and 12 of the bill, lines 39 through 42 on page 12. And then it also clarifies and changes some of the language in the county clerk chapter, which is ORS 205, and provides for how things are to be recorded and clarifies those things. And the county clerks have pretty much passed on those as being appropriate. And it then clarifies, in accordance with what already I believe the state's doing, the fact that items with respect to warrants be recorded in the county clerk lien record as opposed to being docketed. And there's another bill before the House that does similar sorts of things too. So there may be some overlap in that respect. And that's basically...
Which bill is that one?
I think it's...
2203?
Okay, well, we think it's 2203.
Okay.
I could check and get back to Bill Taylor on exactly which bill that was, but there is another bill that's similar to that. And that's basically... Yeah.
Writs of execution.
Oh, well, Alan wanted me to mention that by way of example, when I gave that example about the mortgage foreclosure proceeding, it would apply to all kinds of proceedings relating to real property, such as probate, divorces, etc. But, I mean, the concept is the same, the filing of that short, brief notice of Liz Penance. And that basically is what the bill does at this time. And then it, you know, clarifies some RCP sections to allow for cost to be added for those recording fees in connection with any judgment that's rendered.
Okay, the original bill, I think, didn't it adjust those costs upward, if that's correct?
The original bill did adjust the costs up, but they adjusted it from $3.75 to $4. And the county clerks, they can probably speak to this issue themselves, but wanted a $5 fee because what they did is they removed the indexing fee. And so for some counties that have a very large indexing fee, they'll actually be losing some revenue, but for